Roger Williams University is hosting a crisis management seminar on May 3rd at their Providence campus. Crises, whether a natural disaster, cyber attack, or financial instability, can have severe repercussions if not handled properly. This is where crisis management plays a pivotal role. Join Roger Williams MBA students and expert speakers to learn how to prepare for the unexpected. The program is totally free and open to the public. You can register online at rwu.edu/events/crisis-management-symposium.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Welcome into Bartholomew Town. I'm Bill Bartholomew. Today, I sit down with Governor Dan McKee at the State House, and this interview took place just moments after the State Ethics Commission decided that the governor didn't violate any ethics rules when it comes to that $228 lunch that was paid for by a lobbyist. This, in the GOP's mind, violated a $25 gift limit, the Ethics Commission deciding otherwise, and that's where our conversation began.
Yeah, so it's not news to me that I know what happened. So, as I've said on other occasions, anybody who's looking for some sort of wrongdoing on my part, they're going to come up empty. And then I'm hoping that people will tell the story why. Well, this is the why here is that the Republican Party is, as I mentioned in my statement, not the Republicans that I've worked with for years, right? And certainly providing no leadership in a way that is just very, negative type of strategies to try to create problems for leaders that are in the Democratic Party. Speaker Sakachi was subject to the same type of ordeal as well as I have, but it goes out in the public, and it gets covered as if there's some people might interpret it as, hey, there's some truth to this. It's meant to derail the efforts that we are really focused on in the state, and then it feeds into the lack of trust that could be potentially out there. So when you get a decision like this, I think that people get the fact that these are frivolous accusations without merit. The Republican Party seems to be wanting to go in that direction, And I think that what happens is the more people attack leadership like we're providing in the governor's office, me in particular, and the more happens that people come up empty on those accusations, and thank the Ethics Commission for their work today as well. But then the more trust people have in you, right? When if there was a problem, then of course that impacts the way people feel about you. But when you actually show that it was a frivolous accusation, then all of a sudden now people say, yeah, well, that's that, they're happy to hear that there's no problems, but they're also saying enough of this political nonsense using the Ethics Commission as their, avenue to actually, attack current Democratic office holders.
You echo a sentiment that Speaker Shikarchi basically said exactly on the radio with Dan York after a similar finding in his case where he was not found to be in violation of any ethics violations, that this has become a political tool for a party that has been shockingly unsuccessful on a statewide or federal office basis here in the state. And you wonder, you mentioned that old Republican model, that old Republican idea where maybe you disagree on issues, maybe you disagree on certain hot button issues that are you're passionate about, but at the end of the day, there's sort of this collegial one direction. That direction being the betterment of the people of the state. It seems like we've lost that. Do you think we'll get it back? Do you think it's possible to regain a Republican Party in Rhode Island that is actually just based on, hey, we differ on policy, but not on these sort of tributary type attacks?
Well, it'll take leadership. But as I said, I've worked with Republican leaders over the years. Mayor Avedisian, right? Today, Mayor Hopkins, Mayor Fung, Mayor Almond, Joe Almond, right, who actually works with us. So, I think that it would be good for the people who are, have provided good, sound leadership in a collaborative way, even though there might be some level of disagreement on the policies. Hopefully they push back on this type of behavior, because it's a waste of taxpayer money, right? The amount of money that was spent to do the discovery on my case and the speaker's case, which came up empty, as we could have predicted, cost the taxpayers a great deal of money. And maybe some people don't think it's a problem, but it's gonna cost the individuals that had to defend themselves against a lie money. So this is personal dollars that we have to front for the legal work and other related matters that comes out of our pocket. So why would good people want to get engaged if they could be subject to this frivolous type of complaint? And then if they end up with a bill, $5,000, $10,000, $20,000, we're going to try to recover, but I don't know if there's a recovery strategy here. So I think the Ethics Commission, which should really be internally looking at this and determining, you know, how are they going to, they have to take the complaints, but they also have to take some strategy here, I believe, to hold people who are making frivolous complaints accountable.
Let's talk about the bridge. It's the Washington Bridge. Look, it started when that fateful day came back in December, and the announcement was we're closing the westbound lane of the Washington Bridge. It's a complex bridge. It's sort of an array of different bridges. So I think that's important to just set the table for people who aren't following the story closely. It's evolved now where just yesterday in a press conference, your administration announced that among the possibilities for this project are total rebuild and demolition. So we've gone from a point where it seemed like, okay, there's a problem, we're lucky we caught it, and now we're making moves to try to repair this, to this bridge may have to come down. Can you understand why some people would say, boy, that seems like somebody missed something along the way, and how could this possibly happen?
Well, first of all, it's a long leap to jump to that position. We're going to wait on the engineers to provide the information to us. At the moment, I'm still of the mindset that we're going to take a path in some form of what was originally provided. If that path changes, we'll let people know. So, no, I think that you're involved with an infrastructure in the state of Rhode Island that had not been taken care of. Roadworks was a good idea. 400 bridges have been improved in the state of Rhode Island since that started. Hundreds of miles of highway have been completely repaved. So we got a little ways to go there, but that's just an example that the infrastructure was under a lot of stress. But like on that issue in particular, I'm still in the state of mind of saying that there's a path that was close to what was originally talked about, and until we hear different, that's where our focus is. And I think that it's important for the general public to not jump to that, right to that spot, right? But we'll wait on the engineers, the other professionals, and it's really fairly easy decisions to make, Bill, right? Safety came first back in December. That was the, we know that they had a lodging convenience for that 48-hour period until you were able to reopen the east and west traffic. But safety comes first, and it's not like we got up, in the morning and said, let's cause a lot of problems on Washington Bridge, and this is how we're going to do it. No, we were given a decision to make based on the facts that were there, and it was a safety issue. So you close it down, you reopen it on both sides of the highway, and now the same thing is going to be true. We're going to respond to the facts that the engineers give us and the recommendations that they provide us, and then we're going to keep the public posted on what direction that takes, of any different direction that we're currently on.
The rumor mill has been churning on this. Social media, talk radio, in person, I've heard people say, in fact, I even said, boy, would I stay living in Providence and commute to the East Bay every day if we found out the bridge was coming down, it was going to be like a 3-year type of scenario. So people are starting to have that level of conversation. It's certainly not just a sidebar. Specifically, there's been a rumor that's tossed around about Mayor DeSilva in East Providence reaching out to Director Alviti. Nobody asked about this at the press conference yesterday, reaching out on Saturday night in sort of a panic phone call. Did the mayor of East Providence ever reach out to you, responding to some of the rumors that are posted about much more of a significant time frame and nature of the bridge repair?
So, first of all, the east and west traffic flow that's currently there is not going to change if there's a more dramatic time frame in terms of the
you know, the westbound side. So it's not like there's going to be the whole access is going to be shut down. Yes, it's on certain times of the day it's more difficult to get through that passage, but normally for the whole day your traffic is flowing fairly smoothly. So that's not going to change. Mayor De Silva and I are always in contact with one another. He reached out on Saturday, and by the time I was able to get back to him, he had already talked to Director Albiti. So that communication continues. Mayor De Silva is providing good leadership. We like working with him, and we'll keep him informed as well. I also, last week, the General Assembly asked for the same courtesy, and we're going to provide that to them as well.
Looking back at the state of the state last week, the Team Rhode Island theme, obviously you're a basketball coach, a successful one at that. It's been a big part of your life. Do you think the message translated a week, looking back a week later, do you think the concept has been reported out, digested, however you want to frame it, and Rhode Islanders are by and large ready to, here I go, join the team?
Yeah. No, I think that's absolutely true. But I think that the relationship that we made between the team I coached that never received the respect that it deserved initially. Everybody said that they couldn't get certain things done. And I also believe that both as a team and as individuals, they weren't provided the respect that they deserved, and they earned it to a certain degree. We have to earn our respect. But the state of Rhode Island's in the same spot. We don't get the respect that we deserve relative to the work that's being done in the state of Rhode Island. Of course, you always have to kind of make sure that you're not saying that we're perfect. But at the same point in time, when you are making significant progress, lowest unemployment rate in the history of the state of Rhode Island, construction that's going on, that's putting people to work at good paying jobs, that construction, whether it's in the fisheries or whether it's down in Quonset or whether it's the health lab here in Providence or the expansion of the life science wet lab space in Providence, or whether it's putting people to work at the Tidewater, soccer facility up in Pawtucket on the Blackstone. There is a great deal of momentum that we have, and we should be recognizing that, right? The talking about the work that we're doing on education, this is an all-in, community-wide effort, schools, we had the AFT executive director there, the NEA director there on Tuesday night on the speech on the State of the State. All feeling as though that they're inclined to want to really help in a collective way. So that's a team. That's clearly a team that's being developed. So I think that, yes, I think that the concept is real. I think that we need to make sure that we know that, here's a good example of focusing on the negative. So there was three small business rankings that came out in the last couple of days, last month. One that gets reported is that we're the worst in the country.
Right.
Right. We got reported we're the worst in the country. There was another report that you would think that would get the headline as well, 23rd in the country. Right. The one that said we're worst in the country said we had the worst business environment. The other one, which was by Forbes, said that we had the fifth best business environment. So, and then we have another one that's coming out, the Thumbtack report that I've been working on years, that's going to show that there's 21 states with Fs. Rhode Island's not one of them. And so we're going to end up in the top 10 or 15 in the country on the small business survey that they do. But that doesn't get reflected, Bill, right? So I'm not saying that you don't notice the 50, the rank there, but let's give equal billing to the 23rd, and let's give equal billing to the business friendliness, because look at what we've done on the business side of the thing since I've been governor. We've eliminated entirely any fleet tax, any business that has fleets. We've eliminated virtually 75% or virtually every small business in the state of Rhode Island is not paying a tangible tax anymore. The list is just continues along. We reduced the cost for penalties for taxes that aren't paid on time by 6% that I put in, right? So that we're equal to more Massachusetts and Connecticut, which is our goal. You got rid of a litter tax. You put in strategies to get rid of nuisance type of permitting and cost to that. So the people are getting, you ask the question, are they on board with the team? I think that they are ready, and I think that many are, seeing that we have this momentum that I just described. But yeah, we have a little ways to go of actually being fair with our strategies. I'm looking at our health rankings, right? Now, rankings are not gospel, but they do influence behavior. You look up our healthcare rankings in the state compared to the country. I can't find one that we're not in the top 10 in the entire country on healthcare. Yet we are focusing on putting this team together to create more efficiencies, take a look at where we can get strengthen it, you know, in terms of in terms of reimbursement rates and that type of thing. But we laid in $135 million into the budget to help our hospitals and our nursing homes that visit. So there's many things to celebrate, and I think that a team understands that it's really important to recognize when there's a success and when there's issues that you need to address. I love John Wooden. You know, he never talked about wins and losses. He just said, look, do your very best every day. That's how you measure success. And I think that we are doing our very best, and I think the general public is seeing that, and they're responding pretty positively to it.
There's so many areas we could get into here. We've got 3 minutes left, yes. So it's like, okay, let's open up healthcare, housing. I mean, what are we going to do? We'll be here for 5 hours. So let me ask you a couple of quick ones. What's the biggest thing the biggest challenge Rhode Island faces right now, the biggest improvement you'd like to see, whether it's a sector or something specific?
Yeah, so I think that we've really laid it out. You know, we need to meet Massachusetts levels on our education by 2030, and we need to do everything we can and put all our efforts and our resources into making that happen. We also need to raise incomes. We need to make sure that the things we're investing in, whether it's life science, cybersecurity, which we haven't really talked that much about, the school at Rhode Island College, the bonds we're asking, the life science committee that's been put together, we need to make sure that we're investing in strategies that raise people's incomes and their personal wealth. And one of the key pieces, Bill, that you want to hear me talk over and over again, is a way to track towards home ownership for career path strategies for young people so that they can own their own home, knowing this, that renters and homeowners will end up with 40 times the amount of equity or wealth than a renter will. So we have to kind of work on this low income issues, but we also got to figure out how to get into the next level and start talking about home ownership is really a key towards moving the state forward in a way where people are, that they have some level of capacity in terms of their earnings.
Yeah, there's no doubt that's a big, major crisis that a lot of millennials are facing. A lot of people in my age group where it's like, this is the time historically a lot of people would have owned a home. There's a lot more renters than probably, I don't have data to say that, but that is a huge piece.
For us to get to where we want to go on raising incomes and personal wealth, home ownership is part of it. So yes, we put in almost about $500 million into low and moderate housing. We're going to maximize that. But I want to see a strategy on this next housing bond of $100 million that really helps keep young people in our state, right? And then in a way that they are actually, gaining equity as they do live in the state, because we know overall communities that have home ownership are stronger. The schools are stronger. They're cleaner little free Rhode Island type going on. So, yeah, I think that if you look at the education, raising incomes, and then the health issue, those are the three main areas that we're investing in our budget. And I think that budgets really do reflect your priorities.
I've heard a lot from transit activists who are concerned about a lack of significant funding for RIPTA. Look, this isn't New York. This isn't Chicago. You're not going to take a bus from Boroughville to Westerly every day. Some people might, but most people aren't. At the same time, there's probably significant room for improvement. What's your overall theory on public transit in Rhode Island, and how is that reflected as a priority in your budget?
Well, one of the things that we're going to do is we're going to locate a hub in Providence that's been promised for over 10 years and do it with the funds that we have left over from the bond that was passed in 2014. But I think that that hub should be this place where people go to work, to raise their families, to have a good income. And so that, to centralize this around helping people earn a good living, I think is important in the mass transit strategy, right? And then we put in money in the budget to create an efficiency analysis of the RIPEC RIPTA as they stand right now, right? Let's see where they are. Let's see where the improvements that we can make on the efficiencies. And you're right, we're not a New York City. We're scattered. A good example of convenience that people have in the ride of the vehicles, which we're very involved with electric vehicles now, right? And put money into that for Act on Climate. But look what happened on the ferry. We had like 3,000 people actually use that over a period of time. So we got to kind of make sure that our mass transit, train, bus strategies, bike, really represent the overall best interest of the communities that we live in.
One quick one right here, just kind of looking at the state's arts community right now. A lot of exciting things happening. At the same time, four major music venues in Providence closing at the end of this month, either because they're being bought to become luxury housing developments, or the model's not sustainable. You're a parent of an artist, working artist.
Yeah, Kara's traveling right now, and a struggling artist to a certain degree, but enjoying the music, which I keep on telling her. But no, I think that there's three things that you need to make sure on any organization you have that is public, like a school or university or a community. You really need to make sure that you, on the schools in particular, and I think it applies to the question you just have, we need to make sure the academics are excellent, right? Yep. You need to have the athletics really be a big part of it, too. Number three in the country at Rhode Island College for the women's program.
They're amazing.
Tell some people about that program.
That's right? The best basketball program in Rhode Island right now, yes. Hands down.
Yeah, and URI women's not too far behind, right?
Yep.
So the athletics, you have to have the athletics and you have to have the arts. I would say the same thing in a community, right? I always said that you needed to make sure that you had the finances good, your schools were good, you had the public safety, but you also had a place where people enjoyed being, and that's where the arts come in play. So focusing on arts is an important piece of the formula in terms of having a state that is, like I said, one of the very best in the country.
From the state, from the State House, Governor Dan McKee, thanks so much for your time.
Okay, Bill, thank you so much, and thank you for your work informing people.
Bartholomew Town is presented in part by CCA Health Rhode Island, Navigant Credit Union, the University of Rhode Island Online, and Half Street Group.
At HealthSource RI for Employers, we provide access to health insurance to more than 1,100 local businesses and nonprofits, and 96% of them renew through us every year. Maybe it's our choice of 19 different health plans, our 10 years of customizing solutions, or our one local team of dedicated experts helping employers find quality health insurance. See how our numbers stack up for you. Learn more at healthsourceri.com/employers.